Hello and welcome back to the latest Jules 365 podcast. I, Reece Hurd, am again joined by James Hawkins and Kyle Pont as we discuss and digest the latest Jules news from the last week. The club's poor league form continued in front of the Sky Sports cameras last Sunday, losing 1-0 to Portsmouth in what was a turgid display where Jules' closest attempt to a goal came from a 90-yard Thomas Holy kick. 2 weeks on since Adrian Pennock's departure, and the search for a new manager is still ongoing, as Chairman Paul Scally frantically hunts for someone desperate enough to take over a team who are 2-9 on to be relegated with the bookmakers. And finally, in a busy night of football where Lionel Messi single-handedly dragged Argentina into next summer's World Cup, the real hero of the evening was Steve Arnold, saving 4 Phoenix Sports penalties to send the Jules through to the next round of the prestigious and sought-after Kent Senior Cup, setting up a clash with local rivals Maidstone United. I'm not going to start on the manager situation this week. We'll just start with that game on Sky.
Yep.
Obviously, we was beaten 1-0. It's going to be very much repetitive comments from what we get most weeks, but I'll ask you first, James. What did you make of it?
To be honest, to sum it up, and like I did on Twitter, what has happened to my football club? Honestly, I just look at it and you think, I could put our under 13 side against them and they'd battle harder than that. Just, there's no hunger, there's no desire, there's no ability, there's just nothing. And we are fully staring League Two right in the face.
Would you go along with that, Carl?
Yeah, I mean, I made an article on the website which anyone can go and look at, but I said before the game that with the amount of injuries we've got, where pretty much all of them are defenders, this is going to be the best chance we're ever going to have this season, especially against a game that no one's expecting to win, because one, Portsmouth are an objectively better team, and two, Sky are watching us, so we're not going to win regardless. To just play an attacking team and see what sticks, so we'll play Wilkinson alone up front in a 5-4-1 formation. Peter Taylor.
I can't go too far from where you two have both just sort of discussed about it. It wasn't a great game in general, but I don't think Portsmouth come down and were particularly good. They didn't start battering our goal. They just took one of the few chances they had. I mean, unfortunately, it tells the story of us at the moment. No shots on target in the whole game.
And teams can come down to pre-field and play strikers in centre-half.
And we still can't muster a shot on target.
Yeah.
Against teams that are playing strikers and, in defence.
And what was a real concern to me was Peter Taylor in the press conference after the game said, we're just not creating enough chances. I'm sorry. Surely that is you, as a manager, how you set the team up. When you, like Kyle said, you've gone with one forward at home, you're not going to create chances. How are you possibly, and I know people criticise Connor Wilkinson and stuff like that, but having not scored since September 2016, and playing up front by yourself, and playing in front of a crowd that don't believe in you anyway, we're not going to muster a shot on target.
Especially not when, for 90 minutes, all we've done is the back four have lumped aimless punts forward towards him to try and muster something out of. And if occasionally where he did bring the ball down, there's no one with him. Like I said to you lot before we started recording, apparently on seeing people commenting that watched it on Sky, apparently the commentators were quite sympathetic towards Wilkinson, just saying that he's being dealt such a poor show from the defence.
You could put anyone up. I said on the way back from the game Sunday that how often did we see Cody McDonald play up front by himself and centre half just lump the ball up to him and he couldn't do anything with it? But people wouldn't criticise McDonald. I just don't get how. I know Wilkinson is short of ability, but if you're not going to give him anything to go with, he's not going to show you what he can do.
Yeah.
I think it goes to show on the point you said earlier, which where Portsmouth came down and looked like they didn't play particularly well at all, which it is. But that's a recurring theme here. We're playing in what is got to be one of the worst League Ones there has ever been, and we're still outshining everyone in how absolutely garbage we look.
Well, that's the thing. We went to Rochdale, who were below us at the time, and got smashed. Taylor's first game in charge when we played Scunthorpe. Scunthorpe were rubbish, and we still didn't try and win the game.
I can't see us ever playing for 3 points under Pete Taylor. I really can't.
Saturday spoke volumes about the man we've got in charge at the moment. 83 minutes on the clock. We're 1-0 down. We have Elliot List on the pitch. Portsmouth get a corner. And we have all 11 men in our penalty area. When we're chasing the game needing a goal. So we clear the corner.
Tonight
for them
one.
To bring it straight back. With 7 minutes to go. Chasing the game. I don't get it.
It's like he's deliberately out to wind people up.
I don't get it.
Is it just damage limitation? When it's a 1-0, when you're losing 1-0, you don't damage limit. You try
if
and go
Elliot
forward.
List on, he's going to win nothing in the air. So surely common sense would say, right, you go and stand on the halfway line. If we get that ball clear, you get them legs going and start motoring on towards it. Well, no, we bring him back. So we just clear. We defended set pieces not too badly. But problem is, Portsmouth were just picking the ball up every single time and bringing it back. And obviously, it was a really poor goal for us to concede, wasn't it? Straight 30 yeah. seconds into the second half. After, we have to take the kick off twice because Aimer tried shooting straight from the kick off, which you're not allowed to do.
I missed it. I went to the toilet, which I think was actually probably a good decision.
Aimer just stepped up to it and shot.
What has he said to him at half time? Surely the first thing you come in and say is set yourselves up to not concede, stay in your positions. Even if they have a little bit of the ball in the first 5 to 10 minutes, just keep it solid. Like you say, Aim's come out, shot straight from the halfway line. What message did that give Portsmouth? Portsmouth go, well, they're not taking this seriously.
This thing is, of course,
just go for it.
Aimer was playing centre half. So what's happened is that he's taken the kick off, hit some aimless crossfield pass out to the left, which they've picked up. So Aimer's out of position straight away because he's taken the kick-off. Conor Ogilvie's come pushing upfield and got caught out of position. They're in behind him. That's it. Cross comes into the box and the bloke's got a free header which comes back off the post. And then because Aimer and Ogilvie have got caught upfield, there's someone standing on the penalty spot for a tap-in. Like you say, if 0-0 at half-time, first thing we want to do first 5 minutes of the second half is don't give away anything stupid.
It's a trend that we keep doing.
27 seconds from us kicking the game off, we've conceded a really avoidable goal. And that's the problem. That yeah, we've been a bit more solid this season so far, but that Matt, we lose 1-0, we lose 4-0. It's 0 points. It's exactly the same. And the goals we are conceded aren't teams picking the ball up 20 yards and blasting the top corner going, oh, it's a bit unlucky, they've scored a worldie. The goals are all still so preventable that you'd look at it and go, is that the type of goal we conceded last season? Yeah, it probably is.
And that's the thing is that defensively we might be a little bit better, but attacking wise we haven't got enough to get away with.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas last season there was games that, like your Scunthorpes, where we defended awfully for an hour, but managed to get forward a bit and win 3 penalties because penalties are penalties, but you've got to be in the attacking areas to win them.
Yeah,
we can't do that now.
Exactly. That is the issue. Like someone said on Saturday, I think it was Lewis Brandon said it, is that he said it in his vlog that we've conceded, we've lost the game now.
Yeah, we've been saying that all season. Once we go 1-0 down,
that's it.
Us winning the game is impossible.
Yeah.
We don't score 2 goals. That game against Southend was a freak incident that won't happen again.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if we're going to be a little bit defensive of the defence, so it's like obviously we're a little bit short. Obviously with Ben Nugent going off just before half time, we ended up playing the second half with Finn O'Mara and Jack Tucker in the defence. How do you think they did? Because it's not an easy environment at the moment for them to come into and start playing their first games.
What I'm going to say about them is they didn't look like they were playing their first senior games.
I think Tucker looked more composed than O'Mara.
O'Mara was very much like the rest of them, where it's get the ball and love it.
I think O'Mara looked
possible.
For me a little tad scared on the ball.
But, again, to be fair to him, as far as I'm aware, he's not a right back. He's a centre half, isn't he?
Is he?
And he was playing right back. So again, it's not easy for him.
Certainly coming from Folkestone and Victor, shifted straight to play half an hour at Ewood Park and then start your first game. I thought Tucker looked an accomplished centre half.
Didn't he look any worse than anything else we've had the end of the season?
For his age as well. And it just goes to show that we have got a good academy prospects coming through the club.
Probably one of the best batch of players we'll get for quite a while.
There's a big batch
of some good talent coming through.
But like you say, they're coming into an environment that I don't really want to be.
I think they're young. They're
coming into, but like we were saying that the other week about Darren Oldacre, that the only way they're going to learn is by being in those environments. If they go and make mistakes, it is what it is, because they're not making any worse mistakes than the senior pros are.
No, it's true. It's true.
The thing about it is that they're young and impressionable, and you can if you reinforce positive messages into them about football and you train them right, they can do big things. And as far as I'm concerned, under Peter Taylor, I don't see that happening, because all I see is them doing a Henry Collier and saying, oh, we'll take a point. At the end of the season, you've got 46 points and you're relegated. That's not the attitude you want to have.
The last point I want to, or the last question, should I say, I want to ask for the Portsmouth game. Why, when we're a little bit short up front anyway at the moment, with Eve suspended, and with us going 1-0 down, less than a minute into the second half, why has Liam Nash not come on the field at any point Sunday afternoon?
It just doesn't... I don't think he believes in him. I think it was probably an AD Pennant signing. And I think it was more the fact, like we said, that he was signed because the Jules fans made such a fuss about signing him.
Heck, just want anything to get the fans on side, I reckon.
Yeah, and I think that was all it was. I think that's what Nash was signed for. I still think he's good enough. I think he's shown in little spouts that he can cause defenders havoc. And again, it comes back to, unfortunately, his football club never lets anyone develop. I've seen it all over social media last night that he was poor against Phoenix Sports for however long he played. I think he played the full game.
Yeah, he did.
But come on. Like, if he hasn't played a full 90 in, well,
a bloody long time.
About a good 3 or 4 months, what, you expecting the kid just to fire 2 or 3 in the back of the net just like that? Because, like, it was his level last year. I don't think that's how it works. He's made a big change. He's gone from probably waking up at 5 a.m, going to do his part-time job or whatever he's doing, to now training every day, to travelling over from Essex to Gillingham for training every day. Like, obviously, he's now got to eat right and stuff like that. And his whole lifestyle's changing. Some Jules fans just expect him at the flick of his fingers, because he's got 90 minutes against Phoenix Sports, that he should be scoring 2 or 3. I don't think that's how it works. At the end of the day, it's about time that a manager looks at Liam Nash and goes, you know what, you haven't had the chance, I'm going to give you a good run. Even if he goes and plays in the development side every single week for the next 3 months, because he's getting regular football. There's absolutely no point Liam Nash sitting on the bench. Even if we just said to Liam Nash, look, it isn't quite worked out, but you know what, in January, we're going to put you to a League 2 side for 6 months, get you regular football, you're going to play every single week, then you'll come back to us in the summer. And I think that might be the best for him, because unfortunately Gillingham fans never let anyone develop at this football club. As soon as they don't click it, or he hasn't put one in the top corner, he suddenly isn't good enough.
Yeah. But I think we'll move on from Portsmouth, because it wasn't very fun, to put it bluntly. And we'll move on now. We'll move on now to the still ongoing manager's search. But since we spoke last week, we have a new favourite, which has come out of nowhere, which is Keith Millen. Which, for anyone who doesn't know, he spent a lot of time as Crystal Palace assistant manager. I think he's been caretaker there 3 times. Yep. But his only number one job was at Bristol City, I think it was 2010. Apparently he didn't fare too well. But he's at the 11 to 10 favourite now. Despite the fact he wasn't even on the betting list 2 days ago.
No.
So I don't know if someone knows something somewhere with that one, for him to suddenly emerge that short price. But What would you make of that if it was to happen?
Anything's better than what we've got now, to be honest. And being at Palace, I'd like to think that he'd like to play attractive football. And he isn't... You're not going to be at a club like Crystal Palace if you're a bad coach.
Why is your panic? Is that coming?
I was about to say that.
Hang on.
It was underneath Tony Pulis. In fairness.
Hang on. And also, he hasn't gone down the non-league route.
No, it's true.
Like Pennock.
Trying to prove himself as a
And man. Also, a club like Bristol City, there must be something about him to give him a chance. Whether it's worked out or not, yeah, I'll give him a go because I can't stand watching Pete Taylor's team anymore. I think after summer I've even got to a point where if it was Derry I'd take him probably because
it'd be more positive than what we've got at the
because
moment.
Just oh my god, I can't put up with Pete Taylor's football anymore.
What would you make of Millen, Carl?
Well, what I was literally thinking was really? But then I looked at it again and thought, do you know what? I'd take him over Taylor, I'd take him over Derry. If we were planning on doing a long-term project here, say we've got new investors, I'd probably take him over Evans as well, because Evans won't be here past summer 2019. At the latest, he'd probably be gone sooner than that, I reckon. But I don't think it'd be a bad appointment.
He's certainly got plenty of experience.
Yeah, don't think that at all. And I've always thought Bristol City always try and play the right football. That's always been one of their philosophies. Palace, relatively the same when Tony Pulis wasn't there. Same sort of thing. So I feel like he'd try and install the right type of football in here. And to be fair, at the moment, anything's better than a 5-4-1 where we're playing to not get beaten by more than 1-0. So I'd be quite happy with that appointment, to be honest. I feel like he'd, looking at his previous track record as well, he's been at clubs for a long time. He stays there, so.
And maybe if when January comes round, maybe he could use Palace to help us out with a couple of loan players.
Yeah, they got good junk,
which would be ideal. Obviously, the big question, he spent a lot of time at Crystal Palace under various different managers, so he was clearly well thought of there. But obviously, the question is that there's a big old difference being a number two to a number one. Yeah. Obviously, he's only had a number one role once, and apparently it didn't go too successfully. But obviously, that was 6 or 7 years ago, and maybe he's gone back to doing a number two work, and he might have learnt a lot more since then. But maybe it's just a case of, with the situation we're in, it might be the best we can attract. We might have to take a risk on someone who's not, unlike with Pennock, where he's come from non-league, take a risk on someone that's recently been at a Premier League club with some caretaker experience who maybe wants their own number one role. Because it seems like, as much as we want Chris Power, Nigel Adkins or whatever, it seems like it's a cloud dream, I think.
I think the best thing going for him at the moment is the fact that he's unemployed. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that I reckon we were going to go for anyway. Someone who's unemployed, who's just desperately looking for any route back into the game.
Is Millen not at Palace anymore then, is he?
No, I think he left.
He left not long after Pulis arrived, I believe.
Right, okay.
But, yeah, don't know when he left, but he's not there now.
Okay, but... Yeah, I think it might be a case that, yeah, that's all where you can... All we can attract, but as long as he keeps his football club in the division, it's all we can ask for. Because that's, I generally think if we drop to League 2, we'll drop again. It's just good.
That's something we spoke about before. It has happened to teams, and a lot more people are saying it now that it's not an impossibility. Like Carl touched on a little while ago, this League 1 isn't that strong this year. And generally, the gap between League 1 and League 2 isn't that great anyway. You see it quite a lot. Most teams that get promoted from League 2 don't go straight back down. You get the odd exception. But generally, they come up and they're quite stable in mid-table, which clearly means the step up isn't as great as going from League 1 to the Championship, for example.
I feel like you could look at the top half of League 2 and just look at them and say, they're better than us. we get any team in League 2 in the first round of the FA Cup this year, we won't go through.
That's the thing. A lot of people would look at it and say, this squad in League 2, we put our position probably wouldn't be too dissimilar to what it is now in League 1.
We'd struggle. We'd struggle in League 2. Because in order to get out of League 2, you need a goal scorer. You need goal scorers. Because if you need to be hard to beat, and both of them we're not.
Yeah, there is that. There is that. But like you say, whoever comes in, they have one objective. Make sure we're not one of the worst four teams come May.
Yeah. Don't care
which
what you
is
do.
Whoever it is that comes in, it's a bloody tough ask.
So I couldn't give two craps if we come to last game of the season and it ended how it ended last year and we were still in League One.
I think at the moment,
that'd be a tremendous achievement.
If Jules fans were offered the chance that it would go to the last day for us to still have a chance of surviving, most of us would probably snap their hand off.
Yeah.
But I think in the eyes of a lot of people, we could well be gone March.
We're just over
March.
A quarter of the way through the season, and that says a lot, the fact that that's not just the minority attitude, it's quite a few people are thinking that now. I'd say it's well over half are just like, do you know what? You offer me survival in May right now, I reckon 99% of the fan base would take that now. Only the insane ones would say, nah, that's underachieving compared to what we could do with this squad.
But my personal thoughts on Millen is that I would probably take him. Apparently he's good friends with Heston Tyler, which now makes it all make sense.
Well, there you go. Just for your mates again.
But
well, he's never been involved with drilling a football club before, so
I'd give him a crack. Like you said, James, it cannot. Because when Pennock got sacked, I thought the football cannot get any worse. And Taylor has come in and made Pennock look like Pep Guardiola in terms of his like mindset to football. It's that defensive.
The football was better under Pennock.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, it can't possibly get worse.
It was. Obviously, Steve Evans is still lingering. I think he's 6-4 now, second favourite. Because apparently, Peter Taylor was at Mansfield's game last Sunday.
Yeah.
Of course, managed by Steve Evans, which doesn't make any sense at all. If he's not,
and he didn't get off his dugout once, did he?
Yeah, and then he slagged
the fans off anyway
at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Which made it suggest that like, he's trying to wriggle his way out of the club.
I think he'd want to come here.
It's all very, very
and then
they strange.
Said in his press conference, didn't he? He was flattened by our interest.
Yeah, but that's just because
I think if Mansfield let us speak to him, we'd have Steve Evans here.
I feel a lot of that is too. I think Reece has touched on it before. Is the fact that he hasn't done that well at Mansfield after the masses of money they spent over the summer, and he's looking for a very easy out
before it gets to May and they finish 10th, and all their fans are going, "Oh, he's failed." Yeah. If he feels now that there's a risk that he might not achieve what they've set him to achieve, I think Evans is the type of bloke that will just go, right, I'll get out of here before I can fail,
yeah,
and I'll go somewhere else.
Yes.
Which maybe he's thinking, I don't know. Obviously, we don't watch Mansfield, we don't know how badly underachieving they are this season. But it seems like maybe Millen or Evans is going to be one of the two.
Dead two, isn't it?
Derry seems to have dropped out the betting a bit now.
I think what it probably could be, if we can get Evans, we'll go for Evans. If we can't, it'll be Millen.
Which is probably lends it down to how long will Scally wait trying to play around with Mansfield to get him to talk. Whether it's like, we need a manager now, in which case, Millen, you have to have it. Mm-hmm. Or is he going to go, right, we'll leave it another 3 or 4 weeks and keep plugging away at Mansfield. If they keep losing a couple more games, they might be more willing to let Evans leave. I don't know.
I wouldn't want to piss around with that. I'd want.
I'd rather us if they can't get Evans and Millen will take it, get him in.
How long has Evans got left on his deal?
I think he signed 2 years in the summer.
Did he?
Yeah. So a lot enough for it to warrant us to pay out a fair sum of money to get him away from there. I'd have thought.
So, might be a case that we offer. We say to Millen, look, we'll give you to the end of the season, keep us in the division. And then we go back to Mansfield in the summer and say, right, we've got a year left on your contract, we'll pay you out, and we're over you.
There's a possibility of that, I suppose. I think we're all agreed on that. We need to get Peter Taylor out of that dugout.
Yes.
ASAP.
Yes. Yes, yes we do. I'd have anyone in that dugout apart from Peter Taylor. I'd have the bus driver down the road.
Like I just said, yeah, we're only losing by one goal margins, but it's still 0 points. And I think we're less likely to win the game under him than we were under Pennock, and it was bad enough.
Like you said, Pete Taylor says, if Scully was to come out next week and say, right, can't really find anyone Pete's going to have at the end of the season.
That'd be it.
Season done. Season is that he'd never ever keep us in this.
Which is interesting, because when Taylor first took over as caretaker, you said you thought he would keep us up.
I did.
Have you now realised that that was a mad comment to make?
Well, even in his last spell, the football was dire, but the results were mediocre.
Enough.
He had a better side.
They were mediocre, but
they were enough.
Whereas this time,
he had a Bayo and a McDonald up front, which was always
could always get him out of the game.
Yeah.
I remember when we won 2-1 away at Walsall. I think McDonald scored, or it was 1-1. I can't remember, but we were atrocious that day, and it was.
Was it 2-0? Was it the Sunday evening?
Might have been.
And it was 2-0, weren't it?
And McDonald, it was a big ball up to Bayo. He flicked it around the corner to Bayo. Bayo held it, flicked it back around the corner to McDonald. He'd smashed it in the top corner. And you don't have that this year.
We don't.
Taylor doesn't have that.
We don't have a goal scoring centre half, really, like we did then with Legg. Legg could always get
you
a goal.
Yeah,
Only the squad that Taylor's got this time is considerably worse to the one it was last time.
Yeah, I'd find it a miracle if we had more than about 30 goals.
We could put Oldham last season.
Yeah.
But what Oldham were able to do was keep clean sheets most of the time.
No chance.
Whereas, all right, we've kept 3 clean sheets in the league, I think. But unfortunately, you're going to need more than a clean sheet in your quarter of games to survive if we're not scoring.
Well,
like you said,
get 3 clean sheets in 1-1 game.
If we went unbeaten to the end of the season and drew the lot, we'd be relegated. Yet, at home, we seem to be playing for points.
Weird.
Surely, with the position we're in, I think we've won once since November last year away from home. We have to be targeting the home games to try and pick 3 points up.
Yeah.
And instead we're playing 5 at the back or 6 at the back in some games and playing for a point. I just don't get it's quite triggered. At some point we're going to have to start trying to win games. And you can't wait till March and hope we're still in with a chance. They go, right, we're going to start throwing some games at it now. It's got to start now. Because at the moment we're still in a fortunate position where we're only 2 points off safety. We somehow go to Peterborough and pull off a result, we'll probably be at the bottom 4.
But I think, Reece, everyone's given up enough. But
all the time, the likes of Taylor and that lingering around.
Yeah, of course they have. I think they have. You know it.
Which moves me on to the next point of our leader.
Here we go.
Mr. Scally.
I'm surprised you didn't mention this in the beginning section. You could have had many, many jokes about this.
Obviously, to be honest, Sunday's game was the most negative reaction I've ever heard from the ground towards him.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know if it's because it was on Sky, people realised that they could get their point across and it'd be picked up on the telly, which I know it was. We recorded it and we've looked at it back and the commentators kept panning to him.
What did they say?
And we're talking about it, saying it's like the crowd are making their feelings known to the chairman about it. And obviously, it seemed like the last 15 minutes of the game, it was just every 2 or 3 minutes on a loop, the Rain members singing, "We want Scally out." And previously, like when we went to Oxford, at the end of the game, it was sung for 30 seconds, whereas it was constant in that last 15 minutes of the game.
It was a real...
really wanting to make their feeling known.
It was a real eye-opener.
I think Peter Taylor is the catalyst for it, though. I think it's the fact that he's gone back to Peter Taylor again. It's like...
Yeah. I don't think it is.
We'll put you back in as manager. I don't think it would have been as bad as it was if he didn't appoint Peter Taylor.
True, but...
I don't think even Hessenthaler would have got that sort of reaction, because at least he tried to play some...
It was a real eye-opener to how the crowd reacted on Sunday afternoon. And, I was looking... Obviously, we were sitting in the midway up with our U team and stuff like that, and we were looking across, and it wasn't just a small section.
Well, this is the thing,
it was the whole Raymond.
I still see people on Twitter and whatever. If they still back Scally, that's not a problem to me. They can have that opinion, but it's the people that come out saying, "Oh, it's just mindless idiots with mental illnesses that I've seen on forums that were trying to scally out. Yeah. Unfortunately, if that's your belief, then you have got it wrong. Like I said, we were sitting up that high point in the Medway stand, and it wasn't a group of 10 or 20 people. This was a couple of hundred people in that Raynham end.
Well, how many does that Raynham end hold?
2,500, but it was probably about a third full.
2,400.
And how many was in the Raynham end?
Probably about
on
half
Sunday?
Four, I'd have thought.
About 1,350, I think.
Yeah. 13, and I reckon it was about 800-900 people singing it.
Well, that's the thing, because obviously I'm in my own little corner behind some glass, but apparently I've heard even like blocks 1 and 7 were getting involved. And
yeah,
like,
they were.
Normally block 1 and 7 are just... They're nothing.
They were.
They are nothing.
They were getting involved. It was the whole Raynham end. And you know what? I'm not surprised now.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
I think it did play a factor in the Sky, but I think people were.
It's the best way to get yourself heard.
People are sick of it now. People are really sick of it, and I think Chem realises as well.
And then
obviously the allegation. You're going to go on to that.
Yeah, which we, despite the fact we were sitting probably about 50 yards away from him, we left too quickly to see it all, the commotion where, obviously, we don't know for concrete what happened. All we can do is try and piece together the jigsaw of what people have said on social media. But the impression I get is that at full-time, a fan's approached him, basically slagging him off, saying, I've paid such and such money for this. And the rumour has it that Scally's throttled him.
Yeah.
Because we've been told that a message was heard on the steward's radio that Scally's been involved with something, and it's been said by many that they saw a number of stewards go rushing up to the top of the Medway stand where he was sitting. Mm. So clearly something's gone on.
Yeah. I also heard that the fans said very thing, very personal towards the chairman.
Obviously, we don't know all the details, and regardless of whoever started it, whoever ended it, it's just another situation we don't really want. And of course, it's another situation that speaks of the situation that the club is in moment in time.
That is the issue, isn't it? Is that I think this club needs a new start.
Well, that's the next question I've got down. In your opinion, has Paul Scally taken this club as far as he can?
Yeah, I think yes.
I mean, the first thing we've got to say is for the people that still back Scally and still want him in, I don't think anyone else doubts for a second what he has done for this football club.
I'll tell you what.
He saved this club when it was about to go under, and we will never not appreciate that fact. But especially in football, which changes rapidly year on year, it took over in 95, so same age as me, 22 years he's been doing it.
22 years ago, yeah.
Football has changed a vast amount since then.
I'll tell you, look.
And people sell back,
at the end of the day,
come and go.
What he's done for the football club, he's taken us to FA Cup quarterfinals, he's taken us to Wembley three times, he's backed every single manager that he's ever appointed, and he has done that. It's a fair play to him, he's put his hand in his pocket. But there comes a time where the modern day era catches up with and finances catch up with and money is a big part of what, a bit like Mike Ashley at Newcastle, where he can't quite muster enough finances to get the football club going. And I was listening to Alan Shearer on a podcast earlier today, and he said the biggest and best thing Mike Ashley could do is just be honest and say he hasn't got quite enough money, he's now going to hand it over to someone else. And I think that's what Paul Scally needs to do. He knows that he hasn't got enough finances, and instead of just ruining the rep that he's had, because he's not been a bad chairman.
There's far worse about.
Yeah, there's far worse about. He's took us to the Championship. He very nearly got us into the playoffs, into the Championship when it was the old Division 1. And you look at the other football clubs that have had your Lake and Orients, your Darlingtons, your MK Dons Wimbledon situation, your Leeds, Marcelino. There's a lot of, and I know you get fans saying, well, we could have been not them. I don't care about them.
I mean, just because we could be one of them, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to put up with what we've got now.
I think the fact is that this football club has got, I say it all the time, this football club has got huge potential. You look at its training ground, you look at the facilities it's got, the inside the stadium, the catering, the great hall, everything it's got around it. It's got fantastic potential to go out and be a good attractive proposition for investors to be. You often see investors come in and they have to scrap everything. Is there a lot that needs changing at the football club? Probably not. I just think it needs a sprinkle of stardust over it and some new fresh faces structurally in the football club, management and right media and everything like that. And just says, right, we're a new start. It's a new fresh start. Incentive for all the fans. And go, right, we're going to have a real good go. And let's all do this together. And I think yeah, it's probably the time, Mr. Scully. Thank you, but... Yeah,
I think it's ever since last year when it came out about his heart issues, yeah. Ever since then it's just been a series of many things that just made me think, I think the time's come.
Yeah.
Obviously, and then the tipping point for a lot of people was when, after we stayed up by fluke last season, he continued to give Penick a job.
And he said... And it was the real concerning factor for me was that he said in his interview when he appointed him that he felt almost sorry, yeah. And he didn't want to go through he almost couldn't be asked to go through the managerial process, and that to me he said, you've given up.
He's even said that again this time.
He said it, yeah. Finds it
tedious.
Tedious.
The word he says.
Tedious was the word.
It's interesting, guys.
Has he ever said that before?
It's interesting, back in track about 90 seconds where you said about the whole facilities inside the stadium. And Ken Bates said, when Chelsea visited, so not long after Medway Stand was completed, he was like, these are some bloody good facilities in here, the Medway Stand and all of that, with a great hall and all the jacuzzi and the players' lounge and all of that sort of stuff. It's like, these are some bloody good facilities you've got here. And that's all very well and good, because obviously about that time we were in the Championship, but we've been plummeting through, and I think Scully's time came 10 years ago. Do you remember that
for
time?
A chairman, he's been around 22 years, yeah. Is a long time for a football chairman.
Do you remember that time? I think it was 2008, in April 2008, and we just lost to Leighton Orient or something, and his car got bricked,
yeah.
Afterwards. And then the next programme, he's obviously got his whole two-page spread, which he's had since the beginning of time. He's read Paul Scully, I refuse to comment on any further issues, and then just 90% of one blank page and a second blank page completely. It's like, I refuse to comment on it. And then the Brian Moorshead fanzine that day, well, I think it might have been the same game, came out and it had literally on the back Scully out in red and white text. And I think that's the time when he should have looked at it and thought, let's go.
He always used to say, if there becomes a point where the fans don't want me here, I'll go. Is that true?
No, because in the 10 years after that he's been here, he's taken £2.5 million.
I think the fact is that I think he's realised.
No. I feel like he's approaching it wrong as well, where he's trying to get some more money into the club. He's saying he's not looking for purchasers, he's looking for investors.
But I think this
and
is
that won't make anyone happy.
But I think this is the first time, since I've supported the football club, that he's seriously tried to get people.
Well, according to Radio Kent, he was showing two Malaysians around the ground, yeah. On Sunday, wasn't he? Mm.
Wonder how that went.
Vincent Tan changed the football club to white. Oh, so wait, no, Scully's already tried that.
If they was making any decisions based on the football, then I can't imagine they'd be coming back anytime soon. The thing is, we're not asking for a new owner to come in and spend £10 million and buy us a title.
No.
Someone to inject a little bit of money year on year to allow us to gradually progress, which I'm sure is what we did when Scully first came on. You know, year on year we got better. He brought Pulis in. I don't think we went up the first season, but we did the next season. And then a couple of years later, we made the playoff final, lost, put Seth Taylor come in, and then we progressed further and got into the Championship, gradually improved the time we was there. But since we've dropped out of the Championship, we've not really been able to progress any further.
Yes, Dyer. I feel like if you're going on about a fresh start,
I know this is something that's like just really cliched and a lot of fans aren't too keen on, but I feel like Priestford has to go. And the thing is about that is the fact that football club own a lot of that land on Mill Hill, but there's one little bit that they don't own, and that woman is documented in the press. She says, "I'll sell the land to the football club, but I won't sell it to Paul Scally."
I think that's also.
Yeah.
I think that's also a thing that we've got a bit of a problem is that he's holding us back.
It's at the point where he genuinely is now.
Yeah.
I feel like, because up to that point in 2008, he was controlling the club himself. He would retain full control and run all operations and all that sort of stuff. When things started getting nasty, he got someone else to run it for him. And yeah, we got relegated with Simpson, back, forth, etc. But then he's been, we've been pretty much not been operated by Scally for 8 years or so. And then that summer where we signed Jet, so that was a year and a half ago, the person who was doing all the running operations and stuff left, and Scully was like, "All right, I'll take over," literally immediately after his stroke. And, he was, and then that's where the whole... Because he was never too good at doing that anyway. He was never too great at that regardless. And now he's, the whole started being a bit of a control freak again, and it's all just gone south very, very quickly.
So I think the whole Michael Anderson case, the Jules Community Trust case, it's all these things that are going against him at the moment and not helping his reputation. I think when you cobble it all together, combined with the fact he's tried to say, suggesting that this year's playing budget is like the most he's ever spent in League One, which to anyone that watches the football club knows that that's complete nonsense.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that we're still paying Jay Manuel Thomas when this season started. I can't imagine we've got any players on that kind of money now.
But that's the thing, like I said to you on Sunday, didn't I? About, I think it was the last roll of his dice that he backed Edinburgh with.
Yeah.
And I think he went, right, I'm going to have one last go at it, one last playing budget, and if we don't do it this time, that's it. I've given it up. And I've obviously, where it ain't worked.
Because it seems before, by some freak, we managed to be top for 75% of it.
And he thought
we've got a good base here. We'll chuck some money at it. We'll build on it because it's going to be the easiest squad he'd have to build on to get to the League One for the foreseeable future. Didn't work out.
We just needed a little bit of luck that year, and we never got it.
No, Egan and Dak got injured at the same time, didn't they? Towards the end.
You look at could you say that squad and the football we played was as good as the title winning year for 6 months, probably. But for the League 2 year, for the second half of the season, we were crap, but we had the luck.
We could grind the results out.
We got the luck.
Come January, we ran out. Because I remember after the Wigan game, we played Doncaster, didn't we? And we threw away another 2-0 lead.
We did.
I remember seeing a clip of it, like the Soccer Saturday at the time, and we'd just gone 2-0 up. And the commentator was saying, like, the football Gillingham are playing is absolutely out of this world.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we throw a two-goal lead away and the season just unravelled. Mm. Like the flick of a switch. Sometimes that can happen in football. One little thing can all of a sudden completely hinge fortunes one way or the other. And since then, progressively got worse and worse and worse.
The only time that season I ever really felt negative about the football we played was when we went to Coventry and we conceded 4 goals in 10 minutes. Which was awful. I remember. I remember at the third goal saying, "Oh, we'll go get a hot shotgun." Before we'd even reach the bottom of the stairs, it was 4.
I think that's the thing is that, like you say, Bruce, we've been on a downward spiral since that Wigan game. And instead of the football club putting the brakes on and going, "Right, we'll go back to basics. We'll appoint someone that is going to steady the ship for a while, bring in the right players, have a couple of years of just steadying ourselves, and then we'll look to go again." And we haven't. We've just gone back to right. It hasn't worked out. Jobs for your mates. We'll give you a rubbish playing budget. We'll try and do this, this, and this. And it just seems to happen every time with Jules. It happened. We had a good year. We had a good year with Stimpson when we won at Wembley. We booted him out. Went back and was it Heston Tyler that then come in?
Yep.
And then we had a bit of a year and a half of trying to play a little bit of football. And then Alan come in, didn't work out, booted him out, got obviously then Taylor in,
that didn't work out. Got Edinburgh, went back to, and then obviously, yeah. So, and that's the issue, is that instead of the football, that is the issue with this football club. Every time we appoint someone from outside the football club and it doesn't work out, we just go back to not being asked again.
It's interesting. I've just had seen what is it, Sadler's Stats, just post out some statistics for like all of all leagues as a whole, and there's some interesting ones here. So goals scored, we're not actually bottom. Wimbledon have scored one less than
us. Yeah, they have,
which is very very exciting. Goals conceded, we're 16th or so. We've only conceded 16, we ain't doing too bad. Shots, we've had the third least on 113, and shots conceded, we are miles at the bottom. We are like, it's 203, and the next closest is Northampton on 175. We are so far, so far adrift. And you look at like another team, like I said, Wimbledon have only scored 5 goals, but like they haven't faced that many shots, they haven't conceded that many. You know, they're not, it's not as bad as us, despite the fact they're in a pretty negative league position as well.
And what you say, it leads me on to our next talking point, which is our attacking incompetence. Like you just said, we've only scored 6 goals in 12 games. And in our 12 league games, we've failed to score in 8 of them, which says a lot of the story itself. In our 12 league games, we've had 36 shots on target, which is an average of 3 a game. If you're having 3 shots on target a game, you're simply not going to win very many. Bottom line.
Yes.
Bottom line. Since Taylor came in, we've played 2 home games, and combined in them, we've had 1 shot on target.
Joyous.
Says it all.
I feel like that average is going to stay relatively consistent as well.
But the question I'm going to ask you on that is, are the strikers the sole issue, that they're not good enough, or is it the fact they're not getting any form of service that they need to try and put the ball in the back of the net?
And I think it's the first one, second one, and the way we set up.
Combination of them all.
See, I think it's all of them. I don't think, is Eves good enough for this level? No. Is Wilkinson good enough for this level? No. Is Nash good enough for this level? No. Is Cundall good enough for this level? No. None of them, none of our forwards are good enough for this level.
At
this moment in time. Have they got the potential to be good enough for this level? Yes, they have got the potential. But they also need service. Have they got good enough players behind them? Well, when you're playing three-man midfield of Bowen, Bingham and Hessenthaler, when they're all defensive midfielders, and Aymer, we're chucking in there. And we've gone from Bradley Gatt to that. This is it all, doesn't it? And then you've then got an interim manager who plays an unconfident striker up front in his own. How the hell are we going to create chances? And it just irritates the life out of me when obviously the previous manager, Andy Pennock, and now Peter Taylor. And bearing in mind, it more annoys me with Taylor because he's helped sign these players and now looked at them from a high vantage point and probably looked at numerous DVDs with Pennock and that, and set them up even less for them to create chances and help them out even more. And I just don't get the thinking behind that management.
You say there about the Byrne, Bingham, Hessenthaler, Aymer midfield things. Go back to Sunday's game. Once List and Oldacre come on, we actually looked a little bit brighter. Oldacre picked the ball up and put in a couple of really deadly corners which we could have scored from. He went past players a couple of times, which none of the other central midfielders do. But unfortunately, because there's a risk he might give the ball away on the edge of our box, like any central midfield player could do, no one's playing him. I just can't work it out. List, bags of pace, something this team is crippled for. Play him. Play wingers, play him. No, we won't do that. We'll stick to 4 passive, sideways, defensive-minded midfielders and then wonder why the strikers aren't scoring any goals.
I just don't get what message that management are putting out.
I'd feel much, much better playing a team of unexperienced youth kids who look like they're going to score a goal occasionally and might make mistakes than what we're playing at the moment.
If we played 4-4-2 and we played List as one of the wingers, played Old Acre in midfield and played Cundall and Nash up front, we'd look better than we are at the moment.
At the end of the day, if we went out, played a bunch, we played an attacking team, whether it's youngsters or senior pros, whatever it is, and we had a real go, and we were losing because we were not quite good enough.
No,
fine,
so be it.
Whatever.
We know that. We know the squad's not good enough.
Yeah, but like,
but at the moment, we are not even trying to win games.
Like you said, hit a nail on the head when Sunday, 7 minutes ago, 1-0 down, brought everyone back. I just don't. It goes back to some people shouldn't be in the positions they're in the coaching capacity because they're not good enough. That whole management comes back to Steve Lovell.
What the? Yeah, don't get it.
Is he doing at that football club?
Surely he's cut from the same cloth as Pennock and Day. Yeah. Once they went, he should have gone with him.
He's as to blame as Pennock and Day. Why is he still there? Yeah. Just because Scally thinks that he's good enough.
Oh boy, some fans probably don't. Do you remember when Alan was manager and he got rid of Patterson and people kicked off?
Yeah, Patterson.
Same as when Lovell went. Yeah. Lovell got sacked by Edinburgh, I think, yeah. And people kicked off. So they all got brought back.
Yeah.
They're not good enough. They're not good enough. But it's because some fans are happy with this. They believe that even if you have a decent manager, you can have a backroom team of just club names. It don't work. It don't work like that. You know, we've heard numerous things about Lovell from other people from when he was at Bromley.
Yeah.
Apparently, his coaching ability is incredibly limited.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's just coincidence correlation then, the fact he's our forward coach and the strikers aren't scoring any goals.
There you go. Says it all, doesn't it? Why do you think we scored bundles of goals in Edinburgh where Edinburgh was here when Lovell weren't? It's a bloody all, didn't it?
But we'll move on to our last point, which will be looking ahead to the weekend's game. Unfortunately, we have to do it. There are games that Gillingham have to play, sadly. We travelled to Peterborough. Probably one of the worst possible games we could wish for at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're fifth in the table, and they're joint second top goal scorers with 22. And just for a little side note, ex-Jill Loney Jack Marriott has scored the same number of goals in the league as the entire Jill's team this season. There we go.
Oh, guess who signed up alone and didn't give him a chance?
Yeah, Peter Taylor. Funny that, isn't it? But for a little glimmer of hope for Jills, in Peterborough's last two league games, they've lost them both and conceded seven times. I'm sure they won't concede four times against us, but
that's not a glimmer of hope. Conceding one would be nice.
We love breaking those sort of records. We always rock up and suddenly
Peterborough are one of those teams we just seem to do relatively well against, but anyway.
But
Bradford.
We do all right at Peterborough.
I think I know what your answer is going to be, but the question I've got for you, is there any chance of Jules winning the game, or for a start, even making any sort of attempt to try and win it? Well, what are we going to do? 11 men behind the ball, we'll play for a 0-0 as the game starts, and once we go 1-0 down after 25 minutes, the game's over.
Yeah, and like it was against Blackburn, if we're still potentially in the game, we'll have a go last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how it goes under Peter Taylor. We're not going to get anything from Peterborough.
It'll be probably a very bloody similar starting level to what we played Sunday. It'll be 5-4-1 with no one looking like they're going to go up and score. Probably the same sort of thing where we played Wilkinson up top with Clare behind, Clare trying to do some magic, and Wilkinson at the end of the day not being quick enough to run onto threaded balls that Clare tries to play, and it's just not going to work. I feel like with Wilkinson you need another striker, and it's not going to happen.
Luckily Sunday, Portsmouth going forward are not going to be are not as good as Peterborough.
Peterborough are very, very good guys.
Marriott,
very attacking.
Marriott, Madison. I think they've got a couple of others.
They move the ball quickly.
Yeah.
And are very passive midfielders. Are they going to be able to handle it?
No.
If they're popping the ball about, the likes of Hess and Tyler and that, they're not quick enough.
No. Would very tight pitch at Peterborough as well.
Would a drubbing, do you reckon, put Peter Taylor's interim job in jeopardy? Or speed Scally up in recruitment?
I reckon this will be Taylor's last game regardless.
I think it will be.
I'd like to think by Tuesday, the Wigan game next Tuesday, so we've got like another week, we'll have someone in. If he was interviewing this week, like the reports
if we get battered Saturday, by Monday morning, Brentford manager.
I think the likelihood of us being battered at Peter, it all depends on when the first goal comes.
Yeah.
If we go 1-0 down in 10 minutes, it could be anything. But if we keep it tight for first half, and probably do what we did Sunday, we'll come out, keep things tight early in the second half and concede after 2 minutes or something and lose 1-0. And Taylor can't go in, I can't fault the effort the lads have put in. We just need to create a little bit more, even though that's my job, to set us up to play great football, and I don't do it.
That's a trend this season, isn't it? Keeping stuff tidy first half, keeping it all together in the second half, just letting it go. Oxford,
we was 3-0 down in, what, 10 minutes of the second half?
Yeah, but that's starting. The thing, isn't it? That's the thing with this football club, isn't it? Is that, yeah, well, can't fault the boys' effort, and then it comes to April, when we're riding on the last game of the season, and gone, well, it's our own fault for being in this position. Oh yeah, bloody it is. I hope we get a new manager. It needs to bloody hurry up.
Obviously, our lineup Saturday could be interesting. Obviously,
yeah.
O'Neill, Lacey, both been injured.
Is Zakuani back?
Zakuani is back, but obviously, if he's been travelling, I doubt he's going to be at his peak.
He got back today.
So yeah, Lacey and O'Neill both been injured. Nugent went off injured at the weekend. Connor Ogilvie's form, I don't particularly want to go into.
Crap.
What kind of defence are we going to be putting out? Garmston can't start.
I think Conor Ogilvie will play.
I know Garmston got 45 minutes yesterday, which is excellent news. We need him desperately.
Yeah,
we still can't rush him.
I think Ogilvie will play. I don't think Nugent's going to be fit.
I don't think he is. If Lacey's not fit, it's going to be Aymar. Probably going to have to be Taka. Unless Zakuani, he plays.
Maybe what he'll probably play Zakuani.
Whether he's in condition to play or not.
Probably not, but he'll play.
I think he's going to have to play.
Right back. Unless what we do is... Yeah, we could play a back three of Aymar, O'Mara and Zakuani. And then potentially put Parker or Wagstaff right wing back.
Maybe.
Just to give Zakuani a little bit of cover.
Is it bad that I really actually want to see Parker up front? I never thought I'd say that when the season started, but I want to see him up front again because he looks like our only genuine goal threat at the moment.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I think whatever we request, it isn't going to happen on Taylor.
Imagine that, 31st of July, would you ever imagine yourself saying, I'd want to see Parker up front? After the pre-season,
they'd probably be the same problem if he played up front on his own.
But we predicted on 31st July, Carl, that Pennant was going to get the sack and Taylor was going to get the job. And look what's happening. Didn't we?
It's like reading from a script, this football club, isn't it? That's the thing.
That's the issue, it's predictable. The team's predictable, the football club's predictable. It's only going well, like I said to you on Sunday on the way back from the game, look at Chesterfield. They were League One last season.
Port Vale. They are right down the bottom.
Port Vale after like 10 games last season in the playoffs in League One. Now they're like second bottom.
Look at Leyton Orient. Look at Leyton Orient. They were in the League One playoffs cut, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Playoff final 5 years ago, they got relegated 3 after.
They've now got Charlie Lee in them before they're playing in the conference.
I'd take Charlie Lee back, to be quite honest. I would take him back.
At the end of the day, some fans might say, like, yeah, we'll take Lee 2 or whatever.
No.
You can all bloody well take Lee 2. In 18 months' time, we'll probably be sitting in the conference.
Because the thing is that when you're on this downward spiral that we're on, it snowballs. And trying to stop it is like trying to run up a hill of ice.
Yeah.
So we might win the odd game here and there, winning a one-off game isn't going to turn this club's fortunes around. We're in that much of a horrible situation that winning the odd game here and there isn't going to be the springboard for us.
And the issue is now, last time we dropped into League 2, Scully gave a shit. And Scully had the resources to get us out of it. He doesn't this time. I can guarantee you now, if or when we drop to League 2 next year, we'll be fighting a relegation battle.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think many people would be. Because you like some Wagstaff, Garmston. They're out of contract. Why would they sign a new one for a League 2 team?
Yeah. Would they? Would be stupid enough.
And have we got the resources or the pulling power to really go and attract players that are going to get us straight back up in League 2?
It's the problem. That is the issue, is that Scully would then need a whole new budget because you'd have to rip that side out.
this is going back to what I said earlier. I don't. Who's going to pump money into this club and say, right, you can still own it? Who would do that? Who in their right mind would give 5 million quid, for example, and say, right, I'm going to put this into a football club, but you know what, you can still retain ownership, you can make all decisions with it, I'm just going to give you this money. No one. He's in a dream world thinking someone's going to just invest money into the club. The only way that he's going to get money into the club is if he goes forth.
Can you see that happening?
No. No, he would not.
I think the thing with Scali is that
that's the reason why
he knows his time's done.
He wants to retain control.
He knows his time's done. He's just too stubborn to admit it. And he's killing the football club while he's doing it.
It's all a very sorry state of affairs.
This is the worst I've seen this football club in 16 years of football.
Yeah, I know people will say we've been in League 2 in that time supporting it, but the club, as an entire club, it's been okay. Like, the 3 years, what was it, the 2 years in League 2 under Hessen Tyler, we had a pretty strong playing budget and underachieved. We narrowly missed out on the playoffs, and the Stimpson season, we got up.
Yeah, and obviously under Alan as well.
And all the years we've been in League One, I've ever looked at us in like 12 games of the season, gone, I honestly don't think you've got a Scooby of staying up.
No,
I don't. I've ever looked at it like that before.
No.
And a lot of people are the same, that are looking at it going, and resigned to it. Just people like, I've stopped ranting and raving on Twitter after we lose now. What's the point?
Yeah.
It's just like this resignation's come over me after 12 games of a 46 game season. That our fate is decided.
Yeah.
It's depressing and it's sad, but I don't think I'm the only one that feels like that.
No. I don't feel like it would be when going on for the moans after the game. You wouldn't be saying anything different. It's same shit, different day. Nothing will change. Nothing will change as long as Paul Scully is our chairman, and that is just the sad truth of it. Nothing will change as long as he's our chairman, and he'll be our chairman for the rest of the season. I think
it is sad the way it is ending with Scally, because whether you like it or not, he's done a lot for this football
team. Yes.
But I just don't know why he can't get up and say, look, thank you for all the support these years, I'm done with it.
Regardless of what he has or hasn't achieved in his time here, everyone's day comes. Lionel Messi's probably been the best player to ever grace this game. That doesn't mean in 20 years' time he's still going to be worthy of playing professional football. Everyone's time comes in football.
And look, I tell you what, a lot more people would respect him if he got up and went, I'm going, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Thank you for what you've done and given all the support and everything like that. I'm giving it to someone else.
Yeah, I know.
A lot more people would respect the guy if he just did that.
If he came out and went, I've not got in 2017 modern day football, I haven't got the resources to push this club on to where I want it to go, I'll look to find someone else to do it.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, if he was really looking for a buyer, I don't think there'd be that much of a shortage as he makes out. I really don't.
No.
There's always people looking to buy football clubs. Because it's a pretty easy money maker.
Yeah.
Well,
as I'm sure he is realised.
You're telling me, like, Ipswich down the road can attract
Qatari billionaires
investments, but we can't.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's always people wanting to buy football clubs.
Ipswich were on death's door when they got bought. They were on death's door when they got bought out by billionaires.
But unless Scully came out in public knowledge and made it perfectly clear he's looking to sell the club, these people don't know that.
Exactly. Exactly.
But on that depressing note, I think we will draw a close to this week's podcast. Let's hope Jules can surprise us at the weekend.
Be nice.
Give us an actual win in a competition that matters to talk about. But thanks for listening as ever, and we will catch you next week for the next edition of the Jules 365 podcast.